Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Sometimes the thought passes the mind of the common person. Why are there so many different books of hadith? If there is Bukhari Sharif, there is Muslim Sharif, and there is Tirmidhi, and there is Abu Dawud. So, one could have sufficed. Why are there multiple books of hadith? The weakness of the ummah is they are quick in formulating opinions rather than finding out, alright, I need to know the question, maybe the question is valid, but have I taken the time to find out what was the need? So around the 99th year of Hijri, Umar ibn Abdul Aziz was the Khalifa at the time. So he expressed his concern, إِنِّي أَخَافُ دِرَاسَةَ الْإِلْمِ. I am afraid that great ulama may leave the world and they may take the knowledge with them. So I propose that whatever hadith is present now, we collate all that information in one place. He's got 50, he's got 100, he's got 200. So let's collate all the hadith. So at that point, we found Ibn Shihab, Zuhri, Ibn Hazm, etc. They took the pain to collate all the hadith. Wherever, whoever had, whichever hadith, all was brought into this one book. So that was now the first phase of getting the hadith together. Then they had to go through a second phase. The second phase was now that the hadith is all in one place, for a person that is researching, it may be difficult. Because say, for example, he's searching for wuzu, some aspect of the things that may invalidate wuzu, right? So, if all the information is in one place, he may have to go through 5,000 hadith until he finds that hadith that he's searching for. So let's get the entire hadith in sequence. So first will be toilet, then wuzu, then namaz, and so forth and so on. So now this was the second phase where they did the work of tabweeb. They got the different chapters so that the person is researching, then it makes it very easy for him to research the subject. So this was the second phase. And people like Imam Malik, Ma'mar, etc., they took the pain to get it in tabweeb in different chapters. Well, the first chapter is over, first phase over, and the second phase is over. Now, there was still a different need. Now, let's see now which hadith is more reliable. Because when you want to substantiate something, then it must be very authentic. No break of the chain of narrators. The report of the hadith also must be very reliable. So now, we need to see that which hadith are very much reliable. That's the third phase. So in this third phase now, people like Imam Bukhari, Imam Muslim, Ibn Khuzaimah, all they came about. So their work was to then see those hadiths that are more reliable, authentic, and those that are weak, they're not so reliable. So that was zero. So now, then you find these imams that have written books on hadith, right? So what was their contribution? What was the need for them to write up books on hadith? Imam Bukhari sahab, when he penned the books on hadith, the whole idea was to show those hadith that are authentic and the authenticity of the highest level. So there are different rules in hadith, the different laws in deen, some laws pertaining to faith, iman, and then some laws pertaining to secondary matters like namaz, wuzu, etc. So obviously the first is the faith and the articles of faith. So that's primary. If you miss out on that, then your iman is gone. So that's of primary importance. Then you get a second level, which pertains to rules, namaz, roza, zakat, etc. So now, matters that pertain to beliefs must be of the highest level of hadith. Hadith with regards to belief must be the highest level. It must be so high, they will say, the term they will use, it must be a mutawatir hadith. Or it must be an ayat of the Quran that is clear. Clear verse of the Quran Sharif, a hadith that is mutawatir. Mutawatir means it's reported by such a huge number of people, huge numbers, all scattered out. Someone living in Egypt, someone in Syria, someone in Makkah, someone in Medina, someone in Baghdad. All different people. And all have agreed, the wordings agree on one issue. All of the wordings agree on one and the same issue. Say, for example, a thing like Dajjal, right? So if you take the hadith from Makkah, or from Medina, or from Sham, or from Misr, or from Baghdad, all words are about the same. Maybe the message is the same, maybe there may be a difference of the wording, but the message is identical, whether it's from Egypt, whether it's from Medina, whether it's from Makkah, wherever, but the message is one and the same. So that's called mutawatir. Now if it's an issue pertaining to aqaid and belief, then the hadith must be of the highest level. Because a person who rejects this is going to be out of Islam. So the criteria for this must be very, very strong. It mustn't be something that someone can say there's a difference of opinion, etc. It must be so strong that you reject any of the article of faith that you ought. So that must be of the highest level. So now, if you look at Imam Bukhari's contribution, then this was the highest level. To look for the highest level of authenticity, that was Imam Bukhari sahab rahmatullahi. We will not say that the other books were not authentic, but not authentic to the level of Imam Bukhari sahab. There may be some hadith that are authentic, some that are lesser, of a second level. Authentic, but of a second level. What you will term as Hasan. Right. So one is the highest level, and then you get a second level. It's authentic, but not at the first level. But now, Imam Bukhari sahab rahmatullahi worked on this. And his ustad, Ishaq ibn Rahibi rahmatullahi, he proposed that someone should at least work on this. Compile a kitab with only reliable, authentic hadith. So Imam Sahib must have spent about 16 years just compiling the book. Then this whole kitab is prepared, and approximately 90,000 people learned the hadith from him directly. In that zamana, you can imagine when there's no communication, swift transporting, and whatever other hurdles they had, But with all that, he had so many people. So this was Imam Bukhari Sahib Rahmatullahi's contribution in the science of hadith. Then Imam Muslim Rahmatullahi Alayhi, he also did something similar, like what Imam Bukhari Sahib did, but a slight variation in his kitab was that, like, you start off a chapter on hadith, right? So Imam Bukhari Sahib Rahmatullahi must have brought one hadith or two hadiths under the chapter. But Imam Muslim, what he did, he brought a whole host of hadiths under every chapter. And in a nice, beautiful arrangement. He arranged it very well. The same, like, supporting Bukhari Sharif, but in this manner that what Bukhari has done, he supported, lent more hadiths. So now, if something is unclear in your mind, see, there's some additional hadiths to support the same matter. Then you came to Imam Tirmizi or Imam Abu Dawud Sahib Rahmatullahi, what was their contribution, right? So Imam Tirmizi Rahmatullahi's contribution was, he will show you the reference, right? The mazhabs, Imam Shafi, Imam Ahmad, Imam Malik, Imam Sahib Rahmatullahi, he will show the reference and he will show the mazhabs. This is his mazhab, this is his mazhab, that is his mazhab. So he'll show the mazhabs, and if you want to refer, then look at this book, or refer to him, refer to this one, refer to this one, and you will get all this what I am talking about. So he gave all the reference with all the mazhabs given it. That was all Imam Tirmidhi's work. Then Imam Abu Dawud Sahib, his contribution was, his book was the first book on Sunan. So, if you look at Imam Bukhari Sahib's work, then in our terminology, in the Arabic we call it Jami. Al-Mukhtasar, Al-Jami, Al-Musnad, min Sunani Rasulillahi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, wa ayyamihi la'akhiri, right? So, that was a Jami. Jami in our terms, like what we understand, the closest word I could get in my mind is encyclopedia. Because now, every topic, Imam Bukhari Sahib touched on every topic of deen. So if it was beliefs he touched on, if it was ahkam and rules he touched on that, if it was adab and manaqib he spoke on that, if it was fitan, he spoke on that. If it was tafsir, he spoke on that, right? If it was anything to do with the hereafter, he spoke on that. If it was zuhd, he spoke on that. So basically every topic of deen, he is covered in his kitab. So therefore you call it a jami. And so I say, in my understanding, the closest word in English, closest would be called encyclopedia. Like an encyclopedia, it will cover every topic. Right? So that was Imam Bukhari Sahib's, his vastness of knowledge, his reliability in knowledge, so great, so powerful, to cover all and bring reliable information to support every topic. Here Imam Abu Dawud Sahib Rahmatullahi, so what was his contribution? His contribution is with the passage of time, people's minds, there may be some doubts that may be lingering in the minds. Alright, you know, in the wuzu, we start off with washing the hands first. Right? So, is there any backup from the hadith for starting washing the hands first? So, the imams will say it, yes, there is a backing. Right. There may be hadith which will say that what are the things that will invalidate the wuzu, like breaking wind, etc., etc., will break the wuzu. Now, someone is that is researching and studying, so he'll want to see is there any information that is backing this. So that was the contribution of Dawud. So nobody must feel that the imams or imams of fiqh, imams of hadith, etc., had just made rules from their pockets. So whatever rules they got a backing in the hadith. So his work was to make you understand that whatever rules they have got in the books, they have got a backing for it, they got a support for it, and just the support. There was one PhD about 10 years now that he's already PhD. So he's telling me this sequence and arrangement in books is from the industrialization. That I would say this industrial thing came about maybe about 3.5 centuries ago. I say it's crap, I told him it's crap. Because if you look at the book of Imam Abu Hanifa, Athar, you look at Imam Bukhari's kitab, you look at Imam Abu Dawud Sahib's kitab, they've all got a perfect arrangement and a sequence. They've got a sequence in the kitab. They didn't just take things randomly and put into the kitab. They got a proper sequence. Now, look at Imam Abu Dawud, for example, right? The sequence and the arrangement that he's got in his kitab. Now, obviously, the main thing in a Muslim's life is namaz, right? As-salatu imaduddin. So, actually speaking, he's supposed to be starting off with namaz. But the thing that he starts off with is with toilet. Everything pertaining, adab pertaining to toilet. And strangely, he's got about approximately 25 chapters only on the adab of toilet. Then it makes you wonder what level of love they might have had for Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, the minutest details about toilet, this dua, which foot you must enter, how you must undress, how you must clean yourself, direction, so all that they've covered. Right? So, for a person to cover all that, that means he must be very, very attached to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, loving, with the minutest detail I must go and collect it. But now, you may still ask, that why did he start off with toilet, and namaz is the most important thing. So the reason is obvious. The whole process of cleansing starts off in the toilet, right? Otherwise, if you didn't do the toilet, and you came into namaz straight, then your mind will be in the toilet, physically you'll be in namaz. And they'll be shouting, I don't know why the Mawlana is stretching the namaz today, man. He had to read the whole Surah Ar-Rahman today. So you'll be shouting the Imam, right? You're shouting yourself that you should have sorted yourself out, go toilet, relieve yourself nicely, right? And then come in a state of mind that your mind is present in namaz. What you did, you just, I must get the takbir ula. So you rushed in, right? When you rushed in, so you didn't sort yourself out. You should have sorted yourself out. You know, toilet, everybody has a takaza, has an urge. Well, sort yourself out nicely. Go do all that. Then do your wuzu. Then come into namaz. Then namaz will be a very relaxed namaz. It will be a good namaz. It will be a quality namaz. Namaz is like a personal communication with Allah Ta'ala. Imagine, you know, I have to give you a thing for you to understand. Just give you a simile to understand this thing here. There's no simile, you won't appreciate it. Right? You with your family, right? And you want some intimacy. And now, she is pressed to go toilet. I ask you, is that going to be enjoyable? You won't enjoy it. Hey, you rather sort yourself out and then come. That's why the hadith says it. وَلَا صَلَاتَ وَهُوَ يُدَافِعُهُ الْأَخْبَسَانِ. That namaz is not valid. You want to go toilet, you push yourself in namaz, that I must not miss that rakat. Whether the Imam will finish, whether the Imam will finish. Why is it stretching so long? But you're not asking, why didn't you sort yourself out? Similarly, then, see, this is not something just by the way. It's not a fiqh thing, right? my understanding, see, sometimes it happens in Ramadan, or otherwise out of Ramadan. There's so much of a variety, right, on the table, and you want to do justice to everything, right? Not understanding that the stomach has to carry the load. Then, when the stomach has to carry the load, you're in namaz, but there's explosions in the namaz all the time. Burping, some bump here, some sound that side, everything is happening. But why? That you don't understand what you must eat, how much you must eat, when you must eat. So, with all that variety that's going around, and you see, and your eyes are not getting filled. If your eyes are not getting filled, and all this burping, gassing, all this thing here, that's accumulating in the stomach. When it's accumulating in the stomach, then it's going to affect your namaz, your wuzu, everything. After some time I realized, you know, that wuzu is such a great blessing. Why it's a blessing? Wuzu is a blessing, even physically, that if your wuzu is not breaking for a long period, you know, nice, you're feeling relaxed, and your wuzu is not breaking, that means your health is good. But your wuzu is breaking all the time. Hmm? All the time it's breaking. Burping, gassing, and all everything happening. That means your health is not good. So, then you must understand, every person has got a different system, right? The system is different. What is agreeable to you and what is not agreeable to you, understand. Eat, enjoy, but understand what you must eat, what is agreeable, what is not agreeable. Then your health will be good, your wuzu will be right. So wuzu is like the barometer, it's a checkpoint. If for a long period your wuzu is remaining, you're right, not breaking, not forcing the wuzu. See, one is to force the wuzu, that's wrong. My cousin is late now, he's a doctor, so he's K is patient, so all sugar patients will come. You know, I have to admit you to hospital now. Because they're not careful about monitoring their sugar. And how they will play it, how the patients will play it, that you know that they have to see the doctor every week, right? So the day that they have to see the doctor, they'll go on a nice diet. So that's all playing. It's not the right thing. So look after your health. I tell the people, right, look after your health, so that you're not a liability to anybody, number one. Number two, you can be a support to someone else, right? Number three, if you have to go for Umrah, etc., you can do that. Number four, if you have to support someone old, age, or even the nation, but Africa, you have to support. You're strong, you can support. You can do things. But now, if you didn't maintain all these things here, it will become like when South Africans went to Afghanistan, when there was the clash with Russia, right? So those Afghanis were saying, why South Africans go back? Because to look after one South African, need four Afghanis. So, it's not worth the while. You've got health problems, you're not strong enough, eating rainbow chicken. So you need four Russians, four Afghanis to look after you. So maintain your health. So there's so much of advantage. Your namaz is right. Your wuzu is right. You can be a support for yourself, for others. And if there's a heavy task ahead, South Africa needs you, you can do something. Right? So many things you can do. Otherwise, you yourself are a liability. So understand. What I must eat, how much I must eat. Right? So there's two things, in my understanding, that's damaging the health. One is the dieting. And number two is, you're taking on more responsibilities than you can manage. See, the stress, what you see nowadays, the stress brings about tension, right? And that causes other complications, right? So take on, you have to have some work, but take on how much you can comfortably manage. Food, what your stomach can manage. Responsibilities, how much your mind can manage. You took what you can manage easily, you are well, You're good for yourself, you're good for your household, you're good for others as well. But you took more than what your stomach needed, or you took more than what your mind needed, then you are a problem for yourself, you're a problem for others. See? So we're talking of now Imam Abu Dawud Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh. I said, now how, what was the reason? So this is the reason. He starts off with toilet, then with wuzu, right, ghusl, and then going on to namaz. So all about 150-200 pages just on toilet, wuzu, istihaza, haze, ghusl, all these things. He's covered all that. He went to length to discuss all these chapters. Eventually then he comes to namaz. Now, you want to see the level of a community, then you see them in the namaz. What is the level of the commitment? What is the quality of the namaz? Not the namaz itself, but what is the quality of the namaz? If there is a quality in the namaz, then you see, you know, these people are good, the quality. So that quality in namaz will show the whole behavior, will show the ways, will show their commitment to deen. But then that namaz has to have a quality, not just the performance. It must have a kumar. So it's got a quality, then that shows the quality of the people. But the namaz doesn't have a quality, it's just a routine. So you say it's kajasadin bila ruhi, it's a lifeless body. It's a body, you can't say it's dead now, but it's on a life support. So, about 4 days ago, Surah Maryam was recited, right? So in Surah Maryam, Allah Ta'ala speaks about 7 Anbiya, right? Starting off with Zakariya alayhi salam, then Yahya alayhi salam, then Isa ibn Maryam, then Ibrahim alayhi salam, then Musa alayhi salam, then Ismail alayhi salam, and then Idris alayhi salam. And then Allah rounds it up, he says, An'am Allahu alayhim. We favor them. This was the favored class. See, when we read namaz, so you say, there was Sirat al-Ladina an'amta alayhim. Allah put us on the path of the favored. Right? That's the dua that we make. Every rakat, put us onto the class that is favored, right? So that means your life can only be right if there is a favored class amongst you. You're connected to the class that is favored. Ihdina sirat al-mustaqim. So you can't come right until you didn't link up with the favored class. In the time of the Nabi, then you had to link with the Nabi to be favored. Then after the Nabi is gone, then the hadith says, Bukhari Sharif hadith says, Kanat Banu Israel Tasusuhum Al-Anbiya Kullama Halaka Nabiyun Khalafahu Nabiyun Wala Nabiya Ba'di Wasayakunu Al-Khulafa Fayaksurun. In the previous ummah, what was going on was, who was managing the affairs? Anbiya managing the affairs. Kullama halaka nabiyun, khalafu nabiyun. One nabi goes, another nabi comes. Sometimes in one period you have 5 nabis working. Isa alayhi salam, then Isa alayhi salam with him, together with him, Yahya alayhi salam. All at the same time, Zakariya alayhi salam, all at the same time. So in one place is about two, three nabis, right? That was then. But now, for my ummah, la nabiya ba'di, there's not going to be any nabi after now. So now, when there's not going to be a Nabi after him, then the Ummah will have to have someone that's going to take them on, right? He's going to guide them, lead them, put them on course. So, فَسَيَكُونُ وَالْخُلَفَىٰ, they'll be my vicegerents, my deputies, that will do this work. So you'll see the whole temperament of a Nabi in the person. Though he's not a Nabi, but the same temperament, the fikr, concern, night, day, is just about Allah Ta'ala, deen, get it right. That's a concern. So, فَسِيَكُونُ الْخُلَفَاءُ وَتَكْسُونَ, a lot of them, right? So that means, if you need to be right, you have to be connected. In the time of the Nabi, with the Nabi. And after the Nabi, then those people the Nabi have sanctioned, directly or indirectly, but as though they sanctioned. They endorsed, they sanctioned, and the whole life is like the Nabi. So you'll find about 3-4 things in them. That are, those that are endorsed, will find 3-4 things in them. One, اتَّبِعُوا مَنْ لَا يَسْأَلُكُمْ أَجْرًا. One is, that person that is sanctioned, approved, he's not commercialized, no commercial agenda. Right? There's no commercial agenda in the person. Otherwise, if there's a commercial agenda, do you have the full confidence in the person? If there's something commercial, then will you have the full confidence in the person? Then he is a subject of auction. Who's the highest bidder? He gets it, right? You are bidding something, and he's bidding something else. So you ask for a bayan. So Springer Beach asks for a bayan, Springer Hills asks for a bayan. Springer Hills say, alright, hey, we'll see you, right? 5 grand. Springer Beach says, we'll give a bidyan each other. So what are you going to go for? See, how is it going to work? The bidder talks about the bidder. Someone is asking for a taweez. So it happens in India. So, kis qeemat ki taweez chahte ho? 50 ke ya 1000 ke? Qeemat we want it for 50 or 1000. See that 51 is not guaranteed. Eh? So the whole deed becomes a commercialized venture. So that's why the Quran says the first thing it's ruled out, اتَّبِعُوا مَنْ لَا يَسْأَلُكُمْ أَجْرًا. There's no commercial. That means, not only commercial, but he's not looking for any type of name. Sometimes I have to tell the youngsters that are speaking at the Jalsa, or they're going to give a qiraat or a nazam at the Jalsa, you know. Please don't let it be a show. So one child will ask me, and how do you know it's a show? So I said, see, alright, you prepared a talk, or a qiraat, or a nazam, you have to be offered at the jalsa, say 1 month in advance. Every you're training, someone was training you, or checking you, all that way. On the 11th hour, just before your turn could come to give the qiraat, or nazam, or the bayan, then the MC said, you know what, we got a guest speaker, so we'll have to cancel all the qiraat and the nazam, and all that, we'll cancel it, and put him on. So at that time, you're going to see your facial expression. Hey, man. He stole the show. I don't know why they're calling it. So that means it's a show business. See. So it's not about show. No commercial, no show. Or they're just working on deen. Just that deen must come alive. People must get the right understanding of deen. Name and all that, don't worry about it. Whoever does it, they're all cooperating to see that deen comes right. So that's why one of the reasons why I like the Tabligh Jamaat, because there's no members there. He's the finance minister and he's the foreign minister. No such thing, right? No hiring and firing. Join the work, you're just working for the cause. What will you say for the Jamaat? He's working for the cause, right? You jump in and jump out. Came in with life. And went out with death. The cause carries on. The train carries on. You joined in, did your share, and you jumped off. It mustn't be that the work came with you and the work terminated with you. No. The work must carry on. That must be the mind. It doesn't start and end up with you. So the work must carry on. So that's the planning. You have to think of how you're going to plan the work, that the work must continue in your absence and your presence, when you're around and when you're gone. But the work must carry on. So you have to plan it. So Allah bless the Jamaat. Muhammad Ilyas passed away 1942. That's right. 44. Huh? 44 he passed away. So it's almost 80 years, isn't it? Only almost 80 years, but the thing is still growing. in spite of the differences, etc., but it's still going strong, it's going moving. Can you see that? So that requires a very, very, very strong level of ikhlas. Extremely, extremely strong level of ikhlas with the adherence to the sunnah for the continuity. We will not say that some work that didn't continue, there wasn't the element of ikhlas. But yes, we will say that this had an extreme level of ikhlas supported with the sunnah. That is why Muhammad Ilyas Sahib, in his infancy, the saints that used to see him, right, would say, tumhare andar sahaba jaise shabi nazar aate hain. When we see you, we see something like a sahaba. When we see you, we see something like a sahaba. So from a young age he had that. So the sincerity and the adherence to the sunnah, that brings about the life. The easy thing for, see, everybody may not be in a position to join in, right? Everybody, for some takaza, whatever it is. But the easy thing to get a share in all the activity of deen, every activity of deen you want to share, right? The easy thing to do is that Allah Ta'ala chooses to do two things. One is support them, however you can. Say a Jamaat comes to your place. So whichever way I can support, encourage, support, you see them for supper, brought breakfast for them, or you joined in for some program, some dersh, talim, whatever, but you give them a support. Now, we don't have that attitude, no, hey, I've got a very busy schedule, I can't join them at all. I'm making a point that in the day it's difficult to join them, because there's a lot of guests coming in. So, the morning program, when Jamaat is here, the morning program, then I'll sit down for the morning program. But then until the point that it doesn't clash with my sabak, because I have to start off sabak straight after that. So I'll sit out for 20 minutes or something, until it doesn't clash it. Then sit down with them, and then I move. So one is you join in with them, how much you can, whatever you can, how much you can, be showing that although we are one single body, we are not a split body, one single body. And then, nowadays I tell the Jamaat people, so sometimes we shout or so, please don't talk of any controversial issues with Jamaat. A thing, not one, not even iota, not even alluding. You know those other guys? No, don't even talk. Don't, because you start it off, that will, it'll carry on and on. Then your whole train of thought, your direction will be lost. Right, that's business. Haradullukum ala tijarin. This is your business. You can't do anything in the business that's going to distract you. It's your business, just concentrate. See, in work, there are different departments. So you get one department who will talk about this issue. Let them carry on. They're doing good work, alhamdulillah. Let them carry on. You are in a different department. You don't show yourself as though you are at that level. These people are one level, they do a very good work. Right? You are at a different level, you do your work. But now everybody tries to do all the work there. The cashier tries to be the manager and the director and the sweeper and the toileter, everything. What's going to happen? The whole business will go down. So one is we participate. How much we can? If we can go for 2 days, 3 days, 1 day, whatever we can do something. Number two is, you make dua for the good works that are happening, wherever they're happening, you make dua for them. Right? Now the work is such, see the Jamaat work is such, that there's going to be all levels of people, all type of backgrounds, and all levels. Someone are going to be very refined, someone are going to be very uncouth and uncultured. So this is a mixed baggage. So you must understand that this is what it is. So, when you understand their background, then you can endure them. But if you can't understand their background, right, then say, why he did this, why he said this, why? You understand the background they came from. They came from such a background. And had they not wanted to correct themselves, they wouldn't have joined. They would correct themselves, that's why they have joined in. But when they joined in, they will not understand the background of the compound. It's going to be something that's not going to be too refined. They will not understand the background. So when you understand the background, you know how to take them all. So we are talking of namaz. أُولَٰئِكَ الَّذِينَ أَنْعَمَ اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ. So there's going to be a favor class. Now how you identify the favor class, that's what we're talking about. So one is that there's no material agenda. Nothing. Absolutely. اِتَّبِعُوا مَنْ لَا يَسْأَلُكُمْ أَجَرًا. Number two, وَهُمْ مُهْتَدُونَ. They're doing the right thing. They're on the sunnah. So no material agenda. And number two, they're on the sunnah. Doing the right thing. No material, and they also have the proper understanding. Not just not having a material agenda, but also having the right guidance. Sometimes you're not materialistic, but you're not on the sunnah. So what's the good of being with you? If you're on the sunnah, it's alright. But you're not on the sunnah, I say, no, I got no material agenda, but you got no direction in your life. You're reading namaz, but in the opposite direction. You won't say that you're not reading namaz, but you're reading in the opposite direction. I say, is that namaz right? So, he needs to be in the right direction, and he needs to be not materialistic. اتَّبِعُوا مَنْ لَا يَسْأَلُكُمْ أَجْرًا وَهُمْ مُفْتَدُونَ. So overall, the understanding is right. I say there'll be some mistake here and there. Not that they are malaika, they were faultless, they should be corrected. And when this Qatar games took place, so people were viewing, alright. And then some Jamaat people's photos appeared on the stadium. So all the zimmedars I took off of them, said, not like this. So now that they go to make some tashkeel, all that. So, that's not a valid excuse for them being there. So why? Then, for two reasons, I said, see, if it's a valid reason, then now from now, let's make tashkeel for people to go to bars, to go to clubs, to go to other stadiums, right? So they make tashkeel for that. Why? You know, it's an embarrassing thing that whole game is a conglomeration of every perceivable guna. Every perceivable, we talk of drinks, talk of music, talk of women, talk of gambling, talk of whatever. So it's a conglomeration of every perceivable guna. So a Jamaat is not supposed to be going there. So that's an error in judgment, right? They would say, no, but Colonel Saab, he went to a club and smashed the thing down on everybody, right? So one isolated person cannot be a precedent. Sometimes one buzurg did, one saintly person did something, I just confine it to him. You're not Colonel Saab. Have you got that clout and that iman like him? You don't have that clout, you don't have that iman, that power like he had. He's a Sayyid, and apart from that, he has the clout, he has that iman, he could do that, turn that thing around. He had that strength, but you have it. You became, now that your picture came, and you're watching the sport. So you were the da'i or you were the mad'u. Ask yourself, were you inviting or you became the victim now? See that? It's a dangerous thing. So you would say that, alright, it is a mistake, it has to be corrected. Whatever it is. So that it's our work. And I got an attachment for the work before I say it. Whether privately or publicly. But when it's thrown in the public, then there needs to be a public correction. We got an attachment, it's our child, but it's our child, our brother, so we'll correct him. You can't say, oh, you're doing very good. Can't keep pampering him. No, correct him. Why? It's our child. It's our brother. We need to correct him. Otherwise, from one thing can lead to the other, and the third, and the fourth, and go totally off course. So we're talking of Surah Maryam, and Allah Pak speaks about 7 or 8 Anbiya alayhi salam, and then he rounds it up. أُولَٰئِكَ الَّذِينَ أَنْعَمَ اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِمْ. It's a favorite class. See that? وَمِمَّنْ هَدَيْنَا وَاجْتَبَيْنَا, right? And then And then Allah Pak shows the humility, the dedication, the devotion, all that. So I'm not speaking about that because it's sajda ayat, yeah? Right. So, but he shows in essence the dedication, the humility and the submission to Allah Ta'ala, right? But after all this, this is فَخَلَفَ مِنْ بَعْدِمْ خَلْفٌ أَضَاعُ السَّلَىٰ. Now after all this Anbiya, this good golden era, right, then it was followed by people, فَخَلَفَ مِنْ بَعْدِمْ خَلْفٌ أَضَاعُ السَّلَىٰ. So, in Arabic, you get two words, more or less they look similar, خَلْفٌ and خَلَفٌ. When it's خَلَف, then it refers to a good class of people. A group that came after the succession. It was a good succession. The succession plan was good. But if the succession plan wasn't right, then you say khalf. Then the one that succeeded, they were not right. And you say khalf. Khalf means ba'din khalf. So they came after, but they spoiled things. Khalfun adaw salah. So, two things, the Quran speaks about two things that brought about the destruction. One is, Adaw Salah. They didn't care for the namaz. They ruined the namaz. They read the namaz, but they ruined it. Adaw Salah, wa taba'u shahawat. And what was the catalyst for all the problem? Catalyst for the problem was, they became enslaved to their desires, temptations. Especially we're talking about decreasing, not abandoning, but decreasing. So you can't become a slave. وَاتَّبَعُوا الشَّهَوَاتِ. See that أَضَاعُوا الصَّلَاةَ وَاتَّبَعُوا الشَّهَوَاتِ. أَضَاعُوا الصَّلَاةَ وَاتَّبَعُوا الشَّهَوَاتِ. So the luxury and the comfort, you can enjoy it, but you will remain the boss. Don't let the luxury dictate to you. Don't let it command you. You dictate, today, alright, we'll have this. Tomorrow we're gonna have, mug and masoor. Right. So you will dictate the luxury. Don't let the luxury dictate you. You will lead the luxury. Don't let that thing drag you. So, the two things that destroyed them, ittiba'u shahawat, adaw salah. They ruined their namaz, right? And what was the cause was that they became enslaved to desires and temptations. See, you're getting a package of 30 grams now. But here, 50 or 70, right? But in the process now, maybe you have to leave out one namaz or something, but you know, livelihood is an important, rosy is an important thing, you know? That's how it come about. Rosy is important as far as, but namaz is even more important. Your deeni security is even more important. Some people here, just before Ramadan, so they complain that in America and infrastructure and it's quite difficult, all that. So I say, no, I admire, I appreciate that you have got the concern for a right Islamic infrastructure, etc. You're working towards it. But the right thing would have been when you understand that you are weak yourself. You first see that there's an infrastructure, then you move on. Not that you moved on, so when you moved on, so what drove you, What drove you to that was money. You're getting rands, you're getting dollars there. Right. So you saw that dollar and you got driven, right? So what drove you? The dollar drove you. Now that you are settled, now you're able to, my children, inka kya hoga, falaka kya hoga, falaka kya hoga, what's going to happen now? So the right way is, utlubul jar qabla dar. First you go and see, how is it now? Because I need an infrastructure for myself, for my wife, for my growing child, right? For the child that has become a teenager, I need the infrastructure. Overall, an Islamic infrastructure for any contingency, any zarurat, anything now, there is some infrastructure. So now that's an infrastructure, and I'm living there. So anything happens, there is an infrastructure. My child wants some guidance, he can get it. I want some guidance, there's a Jamiat, there's an alim, someone. There's someone I can refer to, right? There's youngsters and all that, and they can get caught, there's a Jamaat activity, they are there, I can refer to them. For women, there is some women talim and all that. So every type of perceivable infrastructure is there. You want assistance, you. So you don't go just jump for money and then think, hey, but kamara kya hua? Don't do that. That's not the right way. First you make the infrastructure and then you make the move. And we did the other way around. For living in a state, living here, etc., etc. And then you say, hey, amen. Next to me is a gay. The other side is Satanist. That side is an LG. Now how do we live in this? So you just drop yourself in a state. Then all that realization came in, and I must do something. It's not the way. The right way is you make the first infrastructure first, and then you go. Now that was now, when I looked about, when I think about our ancestry, you know, say our grandfathers, great grandfathers, that was their kamal, and really their iman. So when they came in, how they structured themselves? Say about five friends or something came from India. So they lived one place. They lived one place and they saw there was a place they collect for namaz and for the children's education. So they could preserve. Right? They preserve themselves. And I suppose to the barakat of that, in that period when the grandfather came here, you didn't have any irtidad. Like you won't hear any story of any of them coming out of Islam. Do you hear any story? Like you're hearing nowadays. At that time you didn't hear all these things. So they kept to themselves. And they immunized themselves, they guarded themselves. Someone must be doing something ulta sida. Like I say, there must be some ulta pressure everywhere. But they came back on track. Right. Now the thing that is driving you is ittiba wa taba'u shahawat. Where is it, you know? I need this thing here. So that's the thing driving you. Whether professional, not professional, but that's the driving. So when that became the ideal, the namaz became the follower. It's just tagging along. When that became to tagging along, then everything went. So then I take up the tafsir then. What is meant by attaba'u shahawat? Following desires, temptations, what's the meaning? So they got about five things there. Either money, property, good clothing, good vehicles, right, good food. So all the things that we involved in, all the things that involved in, that's what they had become enslaved to. وَاتَّبَعُوا الشَّهَوَاتِ. And then Allah Pak says, فَسَوْفَ يَلْقَوْنَ غَيَّا. Just now, they'll be coming face to face with their monster. Ghayya is the worst place in Jahannam. The rest of Jahannam seeks protection against Ghay. Imagine Jahannam is already a disaster, but the disaster of Ghay is far worse than the rest of Jahannam asks for. So now that we identified our problem, right? Now, there must be some solution. لِكُلِّ دَعِنْ دَوَعُمْ. Allah Pak says, for every problem is sent a solution. There must be a point where we start off our lives correcting ourselves. There must be some point. So, let's start off with namaz. So now it's already nearly 20 past. So about 15 minutes, my Ismail can explain. And I said, the first thing in namaz is your toilet. Right? I explained the reason, right? Let it not be that our minds are in the toilet and our bodies are in namaz. Come prepared. Toilet every sometimes it's an emergency, right? Something just went off, right? Something just went off, right? That other day, 16 rakats I finished, right? Tarawih. Last 4 rakats, I see it's an emergency now. So I said, if I'm going to read namaz now, then my mind will be in the toilet and I'll be here physically. If you want to continue the Tarawih, but Let me go out. So that's an emergency. You took all the necessary precautionary measures, but it just came up, not even. So then you start off with toilet. Toilet, then wuzu, azan, iqamat, and namaz.